I would like to welcome everyone here today, coming out on this warm day and everything. It's good to see all of your faces. I think I want to start off by noting that this is the second Sunday in October, and tomorrow is the second Monday in October. And in the state of California, by proclamation, that is Indigenous Peoples Day. So I would like to acknowledge that, and because it's, in my opinion, it's a small but important step towards recognizing how much these various peoples have and continue and will benefit us and our society as a whole. So I think it's important to acknowledge them. Along with that, then, today I'm going to start out with the land acknowledgement that was developed locally. And that is that the land on which we are gathered is unceded territory of the Waswas-speaking Yupi tribe. The Amamutsin tribal band, comprised of descendants of indigenous peoples taken to the mission Santa Cruz and San Juan Bautista during the Spanish colonization of the Central Coast, is today working hard to restore the traditional stewardship practices on these lands and heal from historical trauma. And I think that's, I'm deeply grateful for the work they're doing, because I also agree that we have a long ways to go to heal the damage that we have done to our lands, our environment, and the fact that they're taking on this task, as they traditionally have for many generations, is really a benefit to us. So I thank them. Okay, so let's see what's. We only have a few people here, but why don't you just say, go around and say your name, and then we'll do it online just to acknowledge everyone that's here. So.
My name is Paula.
I'm Stefan.
Hi, I'm Sydney.
I'm Lisa.
I'm Madeline.
I'm Melissa.
Katrina.
Okay, and online, you won't be in the same order, but I guess there's a couple of people. Would you like to come on and tell us who you are as well?
I'm
Hi,
listening.
everyone. I'm Tara.
Hi, I'm Sharon. I'm sorry I have to have my video off. I've got a headache and it's too dark for anyone to see me, really, but I'm here listening
Wonderful.
today.
Okay, no apologies. We're glad that you are here. So, okay, so thank you for coming again. And I think what we'll do first is take just a short guided sit to settle down and come into the day together. So what I would say is take a deep breath and greet yourself here. Just be present. My teacher, Andrea Fellow, used to say that our practice is actually very, very simple. It's not easy to do, but it's very simple. And what that simple practice is just to be present with whatever's here in the moment. Not try and change it, not try and push it away, not try and engage with it, but just acknowledge what's there. So as you settle in, if your mind is thinking, just acknowledge there's thinking. But for the moment, why don't we start turning our attention to the body and acknowledge your body, because that's where it all starts. All experience, all things we do, and the Buddhist path come through the direct experience. And most direct experience that we have is experience of our own body. So try and relax into your body. Find a place in your body that is comfortable. Find a place that is at ease and breathe into that and just know how that feels. Let your mind start to become more tranquil, not by pushing, but just by watching. Just let it go. Let all of the sensations flow by you. Many times when we engage in this practice, where our attention moves to the places that are uncomfortable, tight, tense. For this moment, try and find a place that is comfortable, at ease. Those are the places we often dismiss. But the Buddha wasn't focused on just suffering. His goal was that we be happy, at ease, comfortable. There was no point in pursuing the study of suffering unless that was the outcome. So see what it feels like to be comfortable. See what it feels like to be at ease. Whether it's your little finger or some other place in your body, there is probably some place that is not suffering. If there are places in your body that are demanding attention, treat them gently, treat them kindly. Don't fight with them. Just give them attention. You give them attention and breathe with them. Perhaps they will start to soften. Softening in the shoulders, possibly softening in the arms, the legs. Wherever feels tight, feels tense. Just breathe with it. Give it kindness, kindness toward yourself, kindness toward your body, and let it soften of its own accord. In addition to your bodies, you also have your minds here. There's phenomena arising in your mind as well. Emotions, thoughts. Positive emotions like happiness and joy, perhaps, or negative emotions like worry, anger. Again, don't fight with them, but acknowledge them, accept them. What is it like to be conscious? What is it like to be here and aware? What is it like to be experiencing these things, to be seeing them come and go? They're not personal. They just arise and leave. Let them do that. Just treat them gently, with kindness. If you find yourself drifting, just come back. Note what's here. What does it feel like to come back? How does it feel differently to be here, aware, or drifting? Instead, the practice is simple. Just be present with what is happening in this moment. Be curious about it. Know it. All you need to do is just know what is happening. By being here, you are giving yourself a gift and a gift to the rest of the world. In this practice of just being present, of accepting what's happening in the moment, of knowing what's happening in the moment, you bring tranquility, peace, and kindness to the world. It's a great gift for you. You should be proud of it. That's a great gift for other people in the world and society. So just breathe deeply and relax into this moment. So take your time to come back. Before we go and start into new material, I thought I'd give anyone who has any questions about last week or what's been happening to this point an opportunity to do that, so we can clear up anything from the past before we go forward. Are there any questions from anyone, either online or in the room, about anything we've done so far? Oh, good. We have been in the process, for those who have, we have been selecting the mentors and mentees and matching them. We've held off intentionally doing much announcement on it because we wanted to make sure that we could make all the matches we could and get everything set up. So tomorrow, I'm expecting you will get your first set of questions and information on RightView, and then shortly, your mentor should reach out to you through the contact information we have so that the two of you can set up a schedule for a meeting, or those that are in small groups, we can set up a schedule for that type of thing as well. So we haven't forgot about it. It's all coming, so but expect it soon. Okay, well, if there's no questions and there's no, and that much is clear, we'll talk a little bit about starting today. We'll start talking about Right View. Before I get into Right View a little bit, I'm going to do a little bit of an overview of the Eightfold Path, and in particular the elements of the Eightfold Path, these eight spokes, if you want to think of them. In Buddhist iconography, they're usually depicted as eight spokes supporting a wheel, and the wheel then is the wheel of the Dharma. And in that view of it, there's no particular order to them. I mean, they go around the wheel, and if any of those spokes is misaligned, if any of those spokes is broken, the wheel does not work. So this is not a process in which we assume that there's one place that you have to start and you finish that like you do first grade and you move on to second grade and third grade. It's more a matter that everything has to come into balance, everything has to arrive at its appropriate strength so that the wheel as a whole functions, that you move through the Dharma. And in fact, these eight elements are not necessarily always done in various paths. They're not very always done in the same order. There is another path within the Buddhist tradition, the one that the monastics would normally use back in the time of the Buddha, that was called the path of gradual training. And it actually had a slightly different order. It still used the same groupings. Generally, we group in three groupings. The wisdom grouping, which contains right view and right intention, which is where we'll be starting today. The ethics portion, which has the three elements of right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And then the training portion, which is right effort, right concentration, right mindfulness. But in the gradual path, which was the path that most monastics who were making a significant commitment to changing their lives, they were leaving the lay life, they were coming into the Sangha, they were basically giving up everything for the pursuit of this, they would start with the ethics portion first. They would start with right action, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the idea behind that was that for them, they were starting to completely rewire their lives, and so they had to come in and jettison and get their house in order so that within that community, within that their own lives, they had the proper platform to sit or settle down, arrive at a certain stability of their life, arrive at a certain tranquility, and learn to follow the path of peace and non-harming in the social order that they were in. And then once they started to settle down and get that, they had laid the groundwork where they could start the training of the mind. So from the ethics portion, for them, they would then move on to the training portion of right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. Because that was then the point that they'd been in the Sangha long enough, they would start to have teachers, they would start to work with the Dharma, they would have the Dharma conversations. They would start to take this settled mind that they had gotten from the ethics and start to learn to train their mind for the final push towards liberation. So then for them also, the next step as they got down the techniques of mindfulness and concentration and became established in the teachings of the Dharma through various discussion groups and listening to talks and all of that, then they would move on into the wisdom portion, right view and right intention. So for them, in a sense, where we're starting would be the last thing that they would have done. Again, it's the same factors, but there was a reason that it was changed in that order. The Eightfold Path was more commonly followed by people who had not made that deep commitment to give up their entire life, basically, to pursue the Dharma. And so it was commonly the lay people and other people would do that. And so for them, because they were coming in, didn't necessarily have a lot of training, didn't necessarily have a lot of experience with the ideas and so forth, they needed to get their orientation first. They needed to have some idea of what am I doing, what is all of this about, what should my efforts, what my intention should be, what should I be trying to do, what should I be trying to accomplish. So they would start in the area of right view and right intention to get that groundwork, where they're going, how this journey is supposed to play out. Once they had enough of that information, then they, like the monastics, needed to get their lives in order. So that's why it would move into the ethical portion. And in actuality, for a lot of the lay people, the ethical portion played a very significant role. Because in the monastic community, the monks had taken a lot of precepts and there were a lot of rules about how they interacted. They had renounced many, many of the activities and events and everything else of the lay life. They put those aside so they could pursue their training. But a lay person, that's not going to happen. You're still going to be in your family, you're still going to be doing your business, you're still going to be involved in governance and everything else that's happening in the world. And So the ethics portion for the lay community became a very big and important part. But then, like for the master community, once they start to get their act in order and can proceed, then they can move into training, into the wisdom functions, and they can start to learn the ways of bringing the mind to peace, of being able to gain insight into the world, and so forth. So that then became, in a sense, the final step. But because this is a wheel, it doesn't stop there. It keeps going round and round. So the next step after the wisdom step again becomes a deeper understanding of the other elements. And like I say, the goal of all this is not to move from state to state as so much as it is to find balance and in all of these different factors so that the wheel runs smoothly rather than has broken places. So that's really kind of the difference, and that's kind of how they come together. In doing this, so we're going to start with right view. And I want to take it apart a little bit. Right view, right is one of those words like suffering, like dukkha, that has been chosen to come into our culture, but it's not an exact match. It has also, by other teachers, often gets classed as skillful, wise, and that's because, in a sense, it is right in the same sense that we would talk about choosing the right person for a job or choosing the right tool for a job. It's not right and wrong so much as the one that is skillful, the one that allows you to accomplish the task that you're going for. It's not, this is the doctrine you're supposed to have, and this is the doctrine that's wrong. And in fact, in Pali, Misha, which means wrong, has a completely different word for its opposite. It's not the same word that we use here. And the word that we use here, its closest equivalent in the Sanskrit language, which is fairly close to Pali and the one that was used for a lot of these writings, actually means to come into balance, to reach equanimity. So again, it's an idea that you're looking for right view, right action, right speech, right whatever, as being the one that is most skillful and will bring you to the place that you really need and want to go, not some type of indoctrination. And that's an important part of what we're trying to do here over the course of this entire program, is that we're trying to give you the tools to become skillful. Because as I've said in my introduction last week, there are many, many different paths that we're going to go through here. No two people will ever take the same path. My path at this point, which runs a number of years, I don't know of anyone else who has taken basically the same path through the same tradition, same so forth. They'll find many places that I match people I've met along the way, but none the same. So one of the skills that you need to develop, if I can help you leave here with anything, it is the ability to manage your own path, manage your own development. What that means in the sense of what we're talking about here today is that idea that this is a wheel of traits, this is a wheel of things that will help you to reach the goal that the Buddha put forth, but it has to come into balance. So what will happen over your path as you go forward, and this is why it goes round and round in a sense, is you'll find that one of those spokes becomes overdeveloped, another one may become underdeveloped, and hopefully you'll get to the point where you recognize that, and hopefully you'll get to the point where you can find the antidote for it. It may be that generosity is underdeveloped, you'll go into service. It may be that understanding of the views is underdeveloped, and you'll take classes in Suda Study. In other words, you're going to have to find the places that are strong and the places that are weak and the places you have to go to balance it out. Now you will find allies in your teachers. You'll find allies in your Dharma leaders to help you through those things, your mentors and so forth. That's really what they're there for, is to help you see the Dharma through your eyes, experience it through your eyes, and be able to take this path from your as your own path. So anyway, sama, like I say, is that type of skillful action, that type of skillful way of doing things, not one that's right or wrong, because there will never be one that's right or wrong. So we're coming around to view today. And we had, I think, Susan had you have an exercise at the end of the last breakout period of last week that where you were looking a little bit at the lenses through which you view the world. And that's really what we're trying to think about here. That's what views are. Views are really what our mind maps, the way that our mind maps the world, the way that things we think about the world. They're not out there. And unfortunately, we have a tendency to both ignore and highlight certain things that colors our world, as you probably recognized when you were talking about seeing the lens through the world through different lenses. And what the Buddha was pointing to when he said that right view in this sense was the view of the Four Noble Path, of the Four Noble Truths, was that he was trying to help people reach this issue of what is suffering. Why do we feel out of sorts with the world to some extent? Sometimes it's deep suffering, traumatic suffering, and sometimes it's just, you know, it doesn't feel right. There must be more here. I don't know what it is, but it's just there's something more in this world that I'm not finding. And after mortifying the flesh and after going through the concentration practice and everything else, he came to the realization that it's not really happening out there. It's really happening inside our own minds. You know, but a lot of it goes unacknowledged and even unnoticed. And it's that unnoticing of, not failure to notice in many cases, that makes the struggle so difficult. I sometimes look to an image that was put out in 1915 by Edgar Rubin, and I'm sure everyone's seen it. I could probably put up something up of it. I'll see if everyone knows. It's an image that he came to when he was studying visual perception, and it has a vase in the center of it that's usually white and faces on the sides of it. It's a very common image in our culture. And what you're looking at there is two different views. You're in the reality of that image. None of those two things are there. But what your mind does is it reaches out and it pulls part of that image into the foreground and then it ignores the rest. And what it chooses to ignore changes the reality that you are working in, or what you're perceiving. So if you don't know that that's there, if you really believe that that face is the reality of that image, it becomes very difficult to switch over and see the other. And vice versa. Now, most people, after working with it for a short period of time, obviously get past it and they can switch back and forth, but they can't necessarily hold both at the same time. So what the Buddha was alluding to some extent when he was talking about right view was, how do you hold that view? What is the view that you need in order to vanquish dukkha, to get past this thing of suffering? And that's one of the reasons he wanted to teach people to look at the mind, to pay attention to what is arising, because this is taking place in the mind, this is taking place internally, and if you can't be aware of it. If everything is hidden, it will be choosing for you what you see. And so one of the things he was looking at then was the whole issue of happiness. I mean, happiness, sukha, is the opposite of dukkha. And the question becomes, what causes happiness? I mean, you know, for most, in our culture particularly, for most of the people, what's causing it is, things like, if I get what I want, I'll be happy. And that's a view. That's actually just a view. It's not necessarily true. In fact, we all, I'm sure, see examples of people who attain great wealth and can go buy all the toys they want in the world, and there's not much happiness there. It's not necessarily true. But if that's the view you buy into, if that's all you see, then you get stuck there. You get stuck in the dukkha. You get stuck in the suffering. So his goal, to some extent, was to break that trance on our default views, so that we could start to look at what was actually happening in the moment and what was arising. And one of the things that he pointed to in the Four Noble Truths was it's not necessarily what's out there. Having all those toys doesn't do it. It's the wanting that brings the suffering. The Buddha never says that there's anything wrong with the goal of being happy. In fact, you know, his emphasis on ease and peace and tranquility and everything else that he puts out there is saying that this is, in fact, our goal. This is what we are trying to do. This is what we can achieve. But he's saying, if you're going to do that, you have to go after the right enemy. You have to go after the right problem. And the problem is not that you don't have things, and having things can bring happiness, no problem. It's that wanting, it's that craving, it's that I've got to have it that brings the frustration. It's that wanting, it's that craving, it's that need that is dragging us down. And that's both for positive things and for negative things. So he is, in right view, he's trying to shift the focus away from the things and the pleasures and the sensory things of bringing happiness to what are the processes in the mind, such as craving, such as aversion, such as delusion, that are causing us to have this sense of dukkha, this sense of problems in the world. So that's part of the reason that we lay the emphasis on you'll see as you start getting your questions, we'll be laying the emphasis on looking inside, looking at different situations you go into, and what's happening internally. One of the things that I had to learn to do as I learned to work with the Eightfold Path is to be able, even when I'm busy doing other things, to keep checking in with myself, to keep asking myself the question, how does this feel? Not just, am I aware? Do I know what's going on? But in addition to, am I aware of what's going on, do I know what's going on inside of me? You know, you walk into a situation that's starting to make you angry, going back to more daily life type things, being aware of the tension as it builds, being aware of the rising aversion that is going to could cause anger, but could also just cause suffering because of other things. By being aware of these things, you start to take the steps of being able to change the view, to shift your own view to something that's more beneficial, healthier, and is going to be a less frustrating for you. Because many of the times when we allow ourselves to do it, we're really doing the harm to ourselves, we're really doing the dukkha to ourselves. You know, it's like, I don't know if you've been asked, but if you think about it, when you get angry, you're probably at someone else. You're doing a lot of internal to yourself. You're doing a lot of tightening up. You're doing a lot of anguish. Oftentimes, you're at your home, ranting to the walls there, and the person or situation you're angry with is totally unaffected. So we do through this process, we do this to ourselves. But a view is not the world. It is an interpretation of the world. And therefore, we can find healthier interpretations. We can find healthier ways of working in the world. That doesn't mean you don't take action. You do take action. That doesn't mean you can't pursue happiness and all of your goals and everything else. It's about not about not doing those things. It's about finding the way that in doing those things brings you the greatest amount of peace, the greatest amount of happiness. And in many times, because you're more connected to what's actually going on in the world, you become more effective as well. So that's right here. That's what we hope to develop out of this. So, are there questions on or comments or anything either online or in the room for about all of that? It's something to reflect on. It's, you know, just take it with you, think about it. Again, you don't have to do anything with it, just it'll find its place. Okay, let's see, I think we'll probably move into breakout groups shortly. Yeah, so I think the breakout sessions for a while, looks like we've got enough for at least a group online and couple groups in here. So I'll give you two things to think about and talk about in light of what I've just said. One is this issue of happiness. What makes you happy? Is it having things? Is it being in control? Is it meeting the expectations of your partners? All of these things are capable of being things that we define as something that we need to have in order to be happy. So, but generally, I think if you go into them and you reflect on them, you'll find that they're a little more complex than that. So explore the view of what are your views about happiness? What do you think you need in order to be happy? And if you don't want to do that, because that can be sensitive for some people, then the other one I want you to think about is we're talking about changing views here. So think back to a time when you did change a view, when this flip from faces to faces occurred. And it doesn't have to be big. It could be a big thing of, you know, you completely discover somebody you thought was horrible is actually doing wonderful things. But it also could just be, you know, something where you had an expectation about something, you added more information, and you changed your mind, your viewpoint. I'm not so concerned about what the is and how big or how whatever it is, but think about the feelings of that. Did you resist that changing it? How much did you fight against that change, or did you go with it? Were you curious, and it was welcome when it happened? So, those are the two questions then. Either explore, where are my views about happiness? What do I believe I need in order to be happy? And then the other one is, in cases where you have in the past, change your view. The more you've had to change it, the better. What does it feel like, and what was your reaction to the process of changing it? Okay? And so, we can just go ahead and break into a couple of different groups. I'll put the group online into a group, and I'll let you sort yourselves out. I guess, two groups of four would probably work. Yeah, well, you can rotate as you talk then. We're going to come back together in the class, so.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so how was that? for everyone. Does anyone either online or in the room here? I think we probably have a microphone we can hand out so that everybody online and in the room can hear. Does anyone have any comments either about what you talked about? We have a certain amount of confidentiality here. If you want to talk about something that you said in the group, that's great. I would rather you didn't talk about what somebody else in your group said. Just as fairness to everybody. If people want to bring it here, that's good. But your feelings about it, whether, you know, how was this exercise for you? Which part of the exercise did you find useful or which part you ignored? You know, we're up into or discussion questions, you know, all of that. We're up for that right now. So anyone have any comments either?
A little bit. Well, I think just for me, I think this kind of class to be meaningful, like really meaningful, we have to have communication with each other. I think those times where we can actually listen and share it, are just really, really important. You know, I think sitting and listening to someone is, we get sort of some of that basic academic stuff that should really get in the heart of the work. I think we really need to do that face to face together with each other. And I really value that. Thank you.
Anyone else have anything to add in here?
I'm going to say one thing. Maybe this isn't exactly what you asked, but I just want to say one thing I really ended up getting out of the glow pop we just had was how we probably really do have that happiness within us. And it's like something we have that we maybe forget about, and I don't know, maybe we don't all have it. I have a feeling we all feel we have a happiness place or a way that we can be if we just remember it and we choose to go there. Despite what we're going through, we can find that happy place, I think. I got that out of the script anyway for me. But, mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Okay, well, if there's no one else, then we can go ahead and take a break and get water, restrooms, whatever you want to do. Probably about a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and start the second half of the program. Thank you very much for your participation so far.
Okay, so can everyone hear me okay? Online, you can hear me okay?
No, they're not back. Don't go, they're back yet.
Oh, they're not back yet. Okay.
No, they're
there. Can you hear me okay, Tara?
The sound's kind of low.
The sound is low.
Yeah, no sound is louder here either as when Jim was talking.
I don't think there's any volume control.
Try this one.
That sounds better.
Try mine.
Okay.
Okay. Put it on this ear, it'd be better.
Well, I can't, the way it, because I have a hearing aid in that ear.
Then flip it upside down so the bend is towards you. Yeah, do that.
All right, let's try this. How about this? Is this better?
That sounds more like it did.
Okay, wonderful.
You bring it up. Yeah, right now it's down at your neck. There.
I can bend it? And
yeah, but yeah. It mainly is by where it is sits on your ear, if it's possible.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's better, right?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone can hear me?
Yeah, that's good. Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Maybe I should just hold it like this. I could do that.
Perfect.
All right, wonderful. Well, welcome back. And wonderful to be practicing with you, and wonderful to be co-teaching with Jim. And Yeah, so this path, I wanted to just start out by reading a short little quote from Bhante Gunaratna's book, Eight Mindful Steps to Happiness. I highly recommend this book. And so Bhante says, you know, the idea that actions have their corresponding results is the first part of what he calls skillful understanding, or we call it in this class right view. The idea that actions have their corresponding results is the first part of skillful understanding. Now you must add to it a good comprehension of the Four Noble Truths. So, yes, this whole realization of a cause and effect, our actions and our intentions do matter. And they do, what happens in our life doesn't happen randomly. Happens according to cause and effect. So I wanted to share that. And so also, just to share that this is a really ancient path that we are walking together, this path of the Noble Ones. Of course, the Buddha developed and taught this path, the path that leads to the end of suffering, some 2,500 years ago. And it may be that this path was laid out perhaps even before the Buddha's time by other spiritual seekers. I don't know. Anyway, so for today, as we are contemplating this first on the path, right view, or as Bhante Gunaratna described it, skillful understanding, I want to just bring to mind the description, or really, it's a metaphor of the path as the Buddha described it. And he described it according to a story that goes like this, that there was a woodsman who discovers, as he's out in the woods, an ancient, overgrown, almost invisible road in the forest. And once he cleared the obstructions from the path, it led him to the ruins of an ancient palace and city. And I love this imagery, just a beautiful way to describe this path the Buddha discovered in his time sitting. The path, he sat for 7 weeks in silence. 7 weeks. In order for him to clear all the obstructions in his mind and heart, and then he was enlightened. And so this path that leads to the end of suffering, to true peace of mind, and I just love that story, and I wanted to share it with you. And, you know, for us, in our time and in our culture, it's a path that takes really a radical turn, a radical direction, away from the conventional view of life in our culture, the conventional path that most people take in this human life, and there's nothing wrong with that path. Often the conventional path is focused on things like accumulating wealth or status or being the most successful in some worldly affair. And nothing wrong with that. But this path that we as practitioners are walking, this Eightfold Path, has a different view right? A different view, right? View, a different perspective, a different way of understanding this human life. It addresses so directly the human condition and the suffering, you know, that comes with having these hearts that get broken, these bodies that age and get sick and ultimately give out on us. So the Buddha said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. And another quote from Bhante Gunaratana, you alone are the author of your future. So our actions do matter, our intentions. It's up to us, and really it's up to us to clear the path of obstructions for ourselves, each one of us individually. And how do we do that? We practice turning inward, looking clearly at the roots of our suffering, as Jim was describing, you know, our wantings, our clinging, our grasping. Right view shows us clearly that what we think, what we say, and what we do has consequences. Our choices matter. Our actions and the intentions behind them, they have consequences. And one thing we discover as we develop this practice is that it's hard to make skillful choices that lead to peace and happiness when our minds are agitated, you know, clouded, distracted. And so we have this practice. I'm so grateful for this practice. That when this practice fully developed, when it's fully developed, quiets the mind, allows us to see more clearly in life, and therefore we can make wiser decisions, wiser choices. And then we can use the tools of mindfulness to investigate our suffering, to view, to see clearly how it's rooted in our wantings, our aversions, our confusion. This is how we developed. This is how we develop skillful understanding or right view. And as Jim also pointed out, you know, this path, this Eightfold Path, is not a sequential unfolding, one step following the next. The different steps of the path come into play as we go about, you know, living our lives, spending time on the cushion, hopefully on a regular basis, and then meeting the different challenges and situations in life as we go out into the world and about our day. And so what we learn is to use the different aspects of the path to meet different challenges, different situations. So this week, and I thought I would share something from my life, I had an experience in my life that showed me directly the power of this practice to end suffering. So, here's my story. I was working in my yard. I was trimming. I had these big shears. I was trimming the dried-out blossoms from my escalonia hedge. And I was really concentrated on this job. I wanted the hedge. I wanted the hedge to look good, to be evenly trimmed all around. I wanted to make sure I got all the dried out blossoms off the bush. So next summer, then that means there would be plenty of blossoms, right? And I kind of noticed, you know, that there were some insects that were started to buzz around, but I was really absorbed in my trimming. And I just thought, oh, there are just some flies buzzing around. And so I didn't pay them much attention. But then, you know, two of them just buzzed up around my head and they got in my hair. And so, you know, as I was brushing them off, they stung me. They stung me on my head, and it turned out that they were ground wasps that had come up out of the ground underneath the hedge, and they were apparently very annoyed that I was trespassing on their property, their territory. So the two stings on my head were extremely painful. And the pain actually lasted for that entire day and into the night. Ibuprofen didn't even touch it. So I had a big reaction right then. Hot anger. Indignation. Hatred for these insects that attacked me when I was not causing them any harm. And so I was really caught up in this. And then thankfully, right mindfulness. One of the steps on the path came to me. Wait a minute. I stopped. I stood still. I looked clearly at this situation. And I saw that I was adding a lot of suffering to the pain of the stings. Right? My anger. You know, my feelings of, you know, how can this be? Why me? Of being personally, somehow personally insulted. And this was making the situation so much worse. So, bringing my practice to the situation, I turned towards my suffering. And I practiced with my relationship to this painful situation. I brought skillful thinking or right intention to what was happening. I let go of my resistance to the situation and the pain. I relaxed my body using my breath. I brought thoughts and feelings of loving kindness to myself. This was all about right effort and right intention, right, to the situation. And I saw that, you know, my wanting this situation to be fair, to be other than what it was, this wanting was the cause of my suffering. So, right view, right? Acceptance of how things really are. And then, shining the light of right mindfulness on the situation, I just changed my perspective. And I stopped looking outward at the wasps and the situation and the bush. And I looked at, you know, the cause of my suffering. I looked inward. And I noticed that all the anger and resentment and so on, that part of it was optional. That was optional. That was the suffering. That was making the situation even worse. So I put right effort into taking action, figuring out, you know, well, how can I care for these wounds on my head? And they were really, I mean, they swelled up. It was really bad. And my whole perspective, you know, especially as I, that loving kindness, caring attitude, really helped me to change just the whole perspective, the whole view of the situation. And that was really the most helpful thing I could have done for myself with the pain and the suffering that I was experiencing. And so, as I mentioned to you, it did last. It was painful for the entire day and the night, but I spent the rest of the day and the night being with the pain and caring for myself and just letting go of the reactivity and all the attitudes that were causing the suffering, the second arrow. So, this Eightfold Path, it's all about this practice. It's about practice. You know, we can read a lot of suttas, we can read our Dharma books and so on, and they're helpful. But to really walk the path, to begin to experience the end of our sufferings, of our fears and so on, we really have to look inward. Turn the lens around and look at what, you know, what is my relationship to a difficult situation? What am I adding to a painful situation? And how do we do that? We have this wonderful practice of mindfulness, right? Mindfulness of the body and the breath, the four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness of feeling tone, mindfulness of what's going on in the mind, and mindfulness of, you know, the other aspect of mind, hindrances, or on the other end of the spectrum, the factors of awakening. So that's what I wanted to share with you today from my personal experience. A difficult situation that could have been much worse if I had continued on with my reactivity and my expectations and wantings. And so I thought I would just ask if you had any questions or before we do another breakout session. Or any comments, anything you'd like to share that came up during that talk or anything Jim was saying previously.
I have a question. Oh. Hi. Seems a little bit more complicated in my mind when I think about if it's like, say, another person that did something to you that harmed you, rather than like something you can't really reason with. And I wonder what does the Dharma say about, like, is there a time for being reactive and then a time for not? Like, we do have some good instincts to protect us from things that might harm us. Do you understand my question?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll try to. Thank you for that. Sometimes, you know, this is where mindfulness comes in. You know, sometimes it's worthwhile to speak to someone about what they have, about how you feel and about how you feel, how it affected you. But it would be the mindful way of responding rather than reacting because, you know, we know that anger and hatred never end by an angry, hateful response, but by love alone is healed. So if we can respond rather than react, if it's appropriate, then that person may need to hear it. But we have to use our powers of discernment because sometimes, you know, we know it's just not worth it. You know, if we know this person or the way the person said it, it's just not worth putting the energy into it. So then we just turn inward and we use our kindness, our like a balm on our own hurt. We have this this practice of caring for ourselves, right? So it's really part of the wisdom aspect of the path to know when it's worth responding. It's never worth reacting because that just builds more, right? I don't know if that helps at all.
At all, if I can, I'll
sure.
Let's see. I want to add a little bit here, too. And this goes back to what I was saying in my earlier talk about this. I mean, ideally, what I would say is it would be best not to be reactive. But on the other hand, if you are reactive, you don't want to react against that either. I mean, because then all you're doing is turning it against yourself. But the reason I say that ideally it's better not to be reactive is what I was pointing out earlier. If you become really angry at somebody, that person is not going to feel it. Generally, I mean, there are cases where you're in the office with them yelling. Most of the time, you're going to take that reactivity home with you. It's going to gnaw at you at the night. It's going to do whatever. So you're really ending up, through reactivity, harming yourself, causing your own self suffering. And that's what we're trying to get away from. So by recognizing what it is and finding a more skillful way of dealing with it is what we're after here. And that generally is when your eyes are open to what's happening, see it, and then have that moment in there to say, okay, what is the most skillful way for me to act? Buddhism is not saying don't act. Sometimes you have to act with extreme force. I mean, if you're going to protect somebody else's life, if you're going to be in many situations, it requires acting. And even in the Buddhist stories about the Buddha, there was a time when he was the captain of a ship with refugees and they were attacked by pirates, and ended up killing the head of the pirates, which, you know, killing is against the Buddhist things. This was before he became the Buddha, so this is in the Jataka stories. But the point is, action, even extreme action, can be necessary, but hopefully there is that understanding of what's going on, understanding of what's arising in you, so that you're not turning it back on yourself, that you're putting out into the world and being as skillful as you can. Now, that takes time, and like I say, you should never react to your own reaction. If you get angry, you get angry. That's what's happening right now. And our goal is to know what's happening right now, accept it, treat it with kindness, and be present with it, so that we can be as skillful as possible. Is that...
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on that talk? Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you know.
Oh. Yeah.
Let me give you this.
Keeps everyone online connected.
Oh, got it. Well, online. I really appreciate that question that you asked. And it's really hard for me to speak clearly around it. But I can tell you that I do have this feeling sometimes that we have to be careful with our interpretation of the teachings, and that we don't use them to harm ourselves and put ourselves in situations that aren't healthy for us, and do it in a way where we think we're kind of following a path of non-harming, but there are times where we actually put our needs second or third or fourth, and then it gets sort of confusing in our heads of, what are we supposed to do, right? What does the teaching really mean? And but I think it's good guidance to just sort of look deep in yourself and know that when you're feeling sort of blocked or you're feeling even scared or frightened, that you do need to take care of yourself. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. You know, we have to develop this muscle of clear seeing, of mindfulness, to know how to respond in a wise way. And that's why, you know, we practice this this wonderful practice of quieting the mind. But then we really can see much more clearly and make wiser choices. So thank you for bringing that up. Anyone else? Okay, so so now we'll spend about 20 minutes or so in another breakout session, and you can maybe mix it up a little bit this time, sit with some different people if you so choose. So here's what to consider and talk about. So if you can consider a time in your life when there was a painful occurrence, painful. It could be a small painful occurrence, sort of like my wasp stings, only it didn't feel small at the time. Or something, it could be something greater, like a serious illness or loss of a relative or friend. So a painful occurrence. And so what you can discuss in your group, so what was your relationship to the occurrence? What was your relationship to it? What suffering was involved? In other words, reactivity, perhaps. This is the second arrow. Can you describe the second arrow? So that's the topic, and I'll just come around and just repeat it once you get organized in the group, if you like. But that's the topic.
You don't have self-talking, but you can bring it back to the group as a whole. How's that?
Okay, welcome back, and thanks for your willingness to share your pain. We're all in this together. We all have these hearts and bodies, and you know, there's pain. So maybe a little sharing, maybe someone from each group could do a little sharing, and then any questions after that. Maybe someone from that group over there is there someone who would just share a little bit about the discussion, or no need to, but if there's something that came up that you would like to share.
I'm glad to, but I'd rather something else, since I've been sharing a bit today.
I appreciate that. But, you know, no requirement, so we can just move on.
I'll just share. You know, again, it's... there's a lot of power just listening to each other. It was really kind of amazing and cool to see how much people get out of sharing it.
I know.
It's amazing, really. I mean, we just don't do enough of that heart-to-heart sharing. So much of our life is so superficial. And to really go deep with someone and really share our deep feelings and emotions is hard. And to have a space to do that is really, really, really wonderful. But none of us had a hard time finding an example to share. I mean, nothing jumped in my mind right away. It took me a little while to come up with one I wanted to share. But yeah, I mean, there were literally probably thousands I could have picked from. But I think the other thing that was a commonality was how reactionary we as humans are. It's sort of, it's so easy to be reactionary. And the other thing we came up with, or that I really saw with people share, is that our family interactions are often the most difficult. And those patterns of reaction are so old and so deep and so well-worn that that's really where it tests our practice often.
Wonderful. Thank you for pointing all of that out. It's so true. I mean, I, you know, connecting and really having a conversation, I mean, I find it hard to get people on the phone, you know, much less in person. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
So, our group also did not have much trouble coming up with something. And I think there was a commonality that our first immediate reaction to the situation was to kind of maybe fall back on old ways. And I won't talk about anybody else, but mine, so gotta keep going, just make the best of it, just keep going, keep doing, you know, and finally I got to a point where I just could not keep going anymore. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's that unusual. I think a lot of us push ourselves to keep going. And there comes a time when we just need to be by ourselves and to experience all those thoughts and feelings that we weren't wanting to experience. For me, it took exactly 9 months for me to deal with what I had to deal with. And so it's been really like a reboot. I have done this program before with Gil and Levitate, and that was several years ago, and I felt the need to do it again to connect with people with things that were important to us. And so I want to thank both of you for making this possible for me.
Thank you. What came to mind actually was when you said, you know, that referenced kind of that attitude of, let's just stop, you know, that wonderful story of the Buddha and Angulimala, the horrible murderer who finally came to the Buddha, and, you know, the Buddha said, I stopped, Angulimala, I stopped, you know. And Angulimala became one of his disciples. Mm-hmm. I love that story. I stopped. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyone else before we end? Mm-hmm. Online, was there someone? I don't see you, so.
No, I think we're okay.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we... we'll just sit together then for a few minutes to end, and then I have a little verse that I'll share with you, and we'll go on with our day.
elevated way.
Hey, why don't you take this?
Thank you all for coming today. And I just want to point out that Insight Center has been here for 35 years in Santa Cruz. And we would invite you, if you feel so moved, to give a donation either to the teachers or to the centers. And there's baskets in the rear for that purpose. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'll remind everyone next month, I believe it's on the 12th, second Sunday, and we'll be doing Right Intention, which is a very important element of this past. Of course, they're all important, so you know, I'll always say that, but we look forward to seeing you again.
Can I ask a
Please.
I had a question. I'm not sure if someone else was also trying to speak.
You go ahead.
You go ahead. We can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. Thank you. I am a little confused about the location. I was planning on doing the in-person groups, but I couldn't show up today. And I in the emails, it said that people were meeting in Redwood City, but it looks like there are people at the Santa Cruz location.
Yes, originally for a couple of years during the pandemic, everything was online, and then IMC in Redwood City did go to having their hybrid so they could do both, and at the same time, we restarted the program here. So there are programs going on in both locations, and I don't think there's any objection to people dropping in on both of them. But it's a long way to Redwood City. I know I've taken classes over there. So I would recommend you come here to Inside Santa Cruz in downtown Santa Cruz and join us.
Good. I'll be there next month, I hope. Thank you so much for everything. Thank you, Susan.
And so there's weekly reflections and kind of exercises. So over the next 4 weeks, should I do the exercises on the right view?
Yes. What happens is tomorrow morning early, the people at IMC will be sending out to you the reflections for this group, which will be week one of right view, and then it'll be week two of right view on the next Monday and so forth. And then if you do have a mentor, during that last week, before we start on the new factor, you'll have a chance to meet with your mentor to go over anything you learned from those questions, anything you have questions about here. And I'm still open if people don't have mentors, if they want to have a question and answer session, we can probably put something together on Zoom or in center to go over that too. I'm open to it. You can communicate with us at eightfoldpath@insightsantacruz.org, and we'll take it from there. This is a do-it-yourself program to some extent. We're up here to facilitate it, but as I said, we want you to learn how to run your own path, and that's really key to all of this. So you help us out, and we'll help you out.
Stay well, everyone. Stay well.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.